There's the OJ this morning. So money, it's one of those things people don't associate with fun. And I think that we should change that as a culture. Matter of fact, when we talk about money, a lot of times tensions rise along with the heart rate. We don't like to talk about money, but we need money to survive. We live in a world where money is a big deal, and yet many households in America are living by the rhythms that we call paycheck to paycheck. Why that phrase is even a cultural phrase, I don't know. I'd like to get rid of the phrase altogether, but we can only do that by talking about money. I'm willing to bet that some of us might not have come today if we knew that we were talking about money. So before you write me off, I want to say this. Let me just ask a simple question. If talking about money could become fun again, less tense, more freeing, would you be willing to listen in for a little bit to talk about biblical perspective on how to make money fun again? Because see, I think sometimes we just look at it all wrong. And we don't talk about it. See, I think that it would benefit all of us and something that we would all be willing to do. In my 15 years of ministry, one assignment has never changed when a couple comes to me and says, "Hey, Jeremiah, will you marry us?" And just so you know, when you have those friends that are wanting to get married and you're referring your pastor, know that I'm not going to marry anybody that won't sit down with me for a minimum of 3 sessions of premarital counseling, because it's important to have conversations. I don't tell them how to be married. I just make sure that the couple has had the right conversations so that their house is the right house. And just so you know, that I stood on my guns from day one, the first couple that I married was a widow of 45 years who married a widower of 54 years. They had 99 years of marital experience. I was still single, and I made them go through premarital counseling with me. That was more for me than it was for them. But I wanted to stand true to my word. Just so that you know the integrity of me saying that, I mean it. But one thing has never changed, even with a couple with 99 years of marital experience. I asked a couple, and I ask all couples, to come up with a budget. And the fun thing is, I don't even look at their budget when they bring it. Some of them, it's on paper. They did it right before the session. You know, we knew this was due, so we just threw some numbers on paper. Some, they've done it well. They got their computer printouts, and they're ready. And as all I do is ask questions, because my only goal is that they make it. Because this is what I know. One of the top 3 reasons why families struggle and why they will end a relationship in America today is financial stress. And the dumb thing about that is we're in one of the best income-generating nations in the world. Our problem isn't getting money, 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 money. I think some of it even stems to this mindset behind money. You see, money and the lack thereof is still a top 3 reason that marriages fail. And part of me cringes at that because of what I just said. This is why I honed in 2009 when creditloans.com estimated that the average 18-year-old graduating in that year would spend $600,000 in interest in their lifetime. I thought to myself at that point, that's a lot of money to me. If I could offer you $600,000, would you be up for that? And the funny thing is, when couples come to me to get married, when they're young couples like that, I'm not really looking at $600,000, am I? I'm looking at $1.2 million when that couple comes to me. And so this is what I tell them that are just starting off. I wish I knew some of what I know now, even 10 years before I learned it. I'm thankful I learned it when I did. And I think it's made, I know, talking about money in our home as a couple more fun. And it has even opened up my ability and willingness to talk to others, because this is the truth. If we know more about money, we can be better stewards of our money and its biblical practice. We are at peace more, and we're better peacemakers for those around us when we have a good, healthy mindset of money. So that's why today I just want you to know, I don't like that most people in America are going to make rich people richer in their lifetime. Bankers, they already have the money. That's why they can lend you the money. I'd rather you have that $600,000. I'd rather have that $600,000 or what we can still amass of that left in our lifetime. And so that's why today we're going to talk about money. And this is key to making money talks fun. And this is what we're going to talk about today. Money talks will be fun when we have a proper mindset of money. You want talking about money as a couple to be fun again? You want to be able to talk to your children about money and have that be fun? You want to be able to, when things rise and somebody that you work with is saying, man, I'm struggling, when you can say, man, I just learned some keys that have blessed my family about money. And it was hard at the start, but through discipline, this is just our testimony. This is our story. And you can be free too. This can be a conversation that's fun in your future. These are all things that we want, and we've got to think different about money before we live different about money. If we never think different about it, we're just going to keep doing what we've always done. And I want to give us two simple suggestions to help us gain a proper mindset about money that's biblical, and it makes talking about money even more fun. And that's simply, we'll start with this. A biblical money mindset gets more fun to talk about when we understand debt. And I'm just going to fly through an acronym for debt. So if you're taking notes, you want to write down some things. I found that in life, debt really comes from specific things. Debt just doesn't happen. We make intentional choices. And so foremost, before we dive in, we need to know straight up, America is okay with debt, aren't we? As a nation and as a people, debt is not a problem. How do I know that? This is how I know that. In America, the number of our credit score is valued higher than the amount of money in our savings accounts. People care more about how much they can borrow than how much money they have. And if our credit score happens to be higher than our savings account, then we are certainly in the right room this morning. Because our credit score really shouldn't matter at all if we have a healthy understanding of money. I got this acronym that we're going to use today from Dr. Gary Johnson. I don't want anybody to think that I'm overly smart. He's served as pastor for more than 35 years at Indian Creek Christian Church in Indianapolis, Indiana. And he wrote the book, Too Much, Living with Less in a Land of More. And he talks about debt in that book that was beneficial to me. And I just really like the practical overlay of this acronym. And then I went and did some study on my own to evolve it. But debt comes from, first of all, desires. Sometimes we get debt and we get into debt because we live in the land of wanting, don't we? We want a newer home, a nicer car, new shoes, designer jeans, quality stuff, the new phones coming out, the new things coming out. Matter of fact, most of us probably, we're so affluent, we live in a home, even when we feel like we're tight, where we've got family members and friends that are already right now hitting us up saying, we want your Christmas list. They're inducing this wanting mindset. We want to know what you want because we have been budgeting to spend money on you because your wants mean something to us because we live in a land of wanting. And desires can be costly and they can lead to debt. I was thinking of what verse to use in the scriptures for this. And I thought, let's just go to the Ten Commandments. What's the tenth commandment? Do not covet your neighbor's house. Do not covet your neighbor's wife, his male or female slave, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. And we don't live in the day anymore where we're really looking for oxes and donkeys unless we're in the cattle business. Or we've got a petting zoo or something like that. But back in the day, those were the things that did the work. And so we're talking about their automobiles. We're talking about their homes. And let's be real. This is where we are. We live in this land where we go visit a friend's house and we go, oh, I love the way they landscaped their backyard. And so all of a sudden, our backyard begins to look like their backyard. Or we go spend some time and we get a ride in somebody's car and we go, man, that was kind of a nice ride. And all of a sudden, we find ourselves driving a car like the one that we like. That's the world that we live in. We naturally covet what somebody else has, and keeping up with the Joneses is not a new practice. That's why God put it in the Ten Commandments. God has always warned us against this desire to want, not because he doesn't want us to have, but because it can be costly. It's just a warning. Don't do that. Let's go somewhere else. There's something better, and we'll talk about that in a minute. In addition to our desires, we find the mindset of entitlement very much alive in our nation today. We are an entitled people. We are entitled to the best seat. We all want to be first class and to be treated better than we would treat others. And we want it day one. We don't want to have to work for it. Matter of fact, people in my generation, we look at what our parents have, and we get out of college, and we get into our first careers, and we want a house as big as our parents have right now. We want a car newer than what our parents drive right now. We all have cell phones that are nicer than our parents. Our parents are still buying flip phones, probably not because they don't want to see the bigger text that are cool, dynamic HD. They just don't want to pay the price that we're paying, and they're probably in a better position to pay that price, but we want it now because we're entitled to it now because we can have it now. Even this mentality shows up in scriptures. Jesus showed us this mentality in that great parable in Luke 15. He gave three parables, and we get to the last one. And he also said, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate I have coming to me. So he distributed the assets to them. In this parable, there's a young man, and he's described as wishing his father to be dead. We don't think about it that way, but that's exactly what he's saying by saying, hey, I want what's coming to me now. Proverbs 20:21 says these words. It says that an inheritance given prematurely will not be blessed. What's the word that it uses? Oh, it will not be blessed like eventually or ongoingly. It's a crazy verse. And yet we get this verse in the Old Testament, we get this play out in the New, but really we live in this land that this is what's going on. We've got kids that we even want our parents to fund some of our entitled pleasures today. And mom and dad might need that later on in their life, or because they're disciplined to have it, they may be in a place to bless us better with it than we are because we live entitled. We want it. The entitled son, he got it, and we remember the text, he squandered it, didn't he? In the entitled living, it led to debt because we want too soon what we should wait to get. Another mindset that leads to debt is the thinking that bigger is better. You ever found yourself in that place where bigger is better? We have something and it works just fine, but the next best thing is already here. Whose saying is that? I want to see how good marketing is. The next best thing is already here. Samsung. This is their motto. This is their drive. Now do we know? Now do we recognize it? The next best thing is already here. What are they playing on? They're playing on this mentality that we have that bigger is better. There's always new technology, and it's always faster. We always want the fastest stuff, right? And this isn't new. The size of our appliances or the toys, or now it's efficiency ratings. My appliance is more efficient. This is going to save me money in the long run. $5 a year, it's going to save me so I can spend $1,000 on this appliance because it's new and shiny and I want it. And it's bigger and it's better. Keeps my food at the same temperature because that's what they're made to do, but it's more efficient. A friend of mine in Gridley, I loved, he always liked to tell the story of his own son. This was an elder at the church there, and he'd tell of his son who would drive up to his house to always show dad his new car purchase, and he'd buy a new car about every 18 months. And it never failed. Every time this kid would drive the new car into his dad's driveway and say, Dad, this is my new car. In the conversation, he would tell his dad about the next car that he was going to buy. I mean, the new smell hadn't even worn off, and he already knew the next thing he was going after. And I'm going, man, what a great way to waste some money. Good grief. But we live in a world where the screens just get bigger and the definition just gets higher. And I think that this bigger, better mindset is very much what Satan preyed on Eve with in the garden. We read in Genesis chapter 1 and 2 that Adam and Eve were created in God's image and His... anybody? We were created in God's image and His likeness. And friends, I want to tell you that we have never been more like God than we were at creation. But Satan, if you go to Genesis chapter 3, he went to Eve and he says, did God really say that if you eat from any tree in the garden that you'll die? And she says, no, we can eat of any tree we want. But if we eat of the tree in the middle of the garden, then we will surely die. Oh, that's not real. See, God's just kind of holding out on you. He just doesn't want you to know what He knows. In essence, they're saying you can be more like God. The words, we don't get the word more in the Hebrew. It says, but if you eat of it, you will be like God. But wait, I thought we were already like Him. We were made in His image and in His likeness. And yet that was the very play that, man, you can be more like Him. It can be bigger. It can be better. It's just more. This bigger is better mindset is tied to our desires. And so for the rest of the message, I'll talk about them in the second half. So consider the fourth money mindset that leads to debt. And that is simply that debt is taught. Oops, sorry. Didn't give you that. Debt is taught. Our national debt is ridiculous. We have more debt than any other nation in the world. Thus, we are taught, even by our nation's practice, that debt's okay. Matter of fact, that's habit. I always love, well, debt's the reason I work. You know, I got debt. It's like we pride ourselves in it. I've got debt. You know, I mean, whose slogan is that? You don't see us paste it on the wall because even though we like it, we really don't like it, do we? Because we feel very much like what we read in Proverbs, that we feel like we're caught in a snare because of it. For many of us, our parents, they taught us about debt. And not because we talked about it, but because they modeled it. Our parents, they had credit cards, and when it came to certain things in life, they showed us how to live by the charge it mentality. We don't have it now, we'll just charge it. According to ValuePenguin.com, Kansas is right in the middle of the national average when it comes to our credit card debt. The average Kansas family is 25th from the highest and 26th from the lowest amount of debt per home on a credit card. So if you want an evaluative tool, ValuePenguin.com says that in 2016, Kansas homes on average have $5,647 in credit card debt alone. So that's not your automobile loans. That's not your housing loan. That is your credit card debt. Think about that. That's more than 1 month's wage for most Kansas families. So most Kansas families are living 1 to 2 months behind on average. And so if that's average, for some of you that are under it, that's how much under it other families are in this equation. And so at some point, we just need to talk about debt to say that this has been taught to us and it's not something we have to keep. See, we have this debt because the majority didn't talk about it with their parents. Instead, they just learned it from them. When things got tight, our parents charged it, so we do the same. And when we live with the desires that are okay to have, when we live with the entitlement that we're okay to have, and with this bigger is better mentality, we don't live with much left so that when something comes up, we begin teaching even our children that it's okay to charge it. Because if nothing else, we know that one thing we can count on, and it's our income. And so I'll just pay for next month what I want to have this month, playing back into the desires, entitlement, and the bigger is better world that we live in. Go back to Luke 15 in your mind with me for a minute. In that parable, the dad had an inheritance set aside for his children. You can't have debt and have an inheritance set aside for your children. The child, he goes and he squanders his inheritance. But when he's there squandering it, remember what the kid thinks? He thinks, man, I'm so hungry as a hired hand. He started to work and he couldn't even afford to work and live in the land that he was living in. He's going, my dad always had enough, and he must have taught his employees good because even his employees always had enough. I need to go back home and tell my dad, look, I'm obviously not fit to be your son. I've already got my inheritance from you, but can I work for you? Maybe he'll at least let me work for him, because at some point this is taught, and even my dad has a way of getting his employees to catch the principle of living within their means. What an impressive parable. What an impressive situation encounter. Friends, if we want money talks to be fun again, we must call debt what it is and understand its origin. And its origin in all of these arenas is an unhealthy understanding of debt. Debt is not something that we should be proud of or okay with. It's a necessary evil at some levels. I think in America today, it's very hard to never have a mortgage and to own your own home. Some debt is okay to have. Is what I want us to get at is what our understanding of debt, even with a mortgage, if we have a right understanding of that debt, we're going to want to get out of it quickly so we can get on the right side of interest. If your money was working for you and making you more money, that's a win. And that can happen. You don't have to make a lot of money. They say that the average person, if they got out of debt by 30 and made just $50,000 a year for the rest of their lives as a family and put 15% of that away and earned 15% on it, they would retire millionaires at a young age. You can be a millionaire in America with disciplined practice. And I'm not going to go there with helping you scope that out. I'll give you the tools, and next week I want to give the tools for a master plan so that you can do this, because you and your spouse or you and your household or those that you live with and among, your tribe that spends the money together, however you work your finances out, you all need to be on the same page. You need to have conversations, and I want those to be fun conversations where everybody's knowledgeable of what's going on so that you can make it. And so that you can get on the right side of interest, so that you're not giving $600,000 in your lifetime to somebody who has enough already. I'd rather that be in your pocket. But that's never going to get to your pocket if we don't start with this mindset of saying debt is something that I don't want to be a part of me anymore, because debt is the biggest reason why money talks are not fun when we think about our life and our living. So when we know that our mindset's unhealthy, we're open to the second half of the lesson. And so you're going to want to turn your Bibles to 1 Timothy chapter 6, okay? 1 Timothy chapter 6, and we're going to look at the second part of this. Money talks get fun when we overcome debt, and really even the mindset of debt. So how do we... Oops. When we overcome debt. And the first thing that we'll look at here, when we ask how do we overcome our desire and the bigger is better mindset, which are tied to each other, how do we overcome the D and the B and the debt? It's one simple word. We do it with contentment. The word is contentment. Contentment is our friend when it comes to a healthy money mindset. I drive a 1999 Honda Passport that's been paid off since July of 2008. So before our first son was born, I'd had the Passport that I drive paid off. I could afford to buy or to drive a different car. I could probably pay cash for one similar to mine. But instead, I'm choosing to save till I have cash to drive a car that's going to be good. And besides, mine works just fine, and I only put about 3,000 miles a year on it. And if I buy something newer, it's going to cost me more money in other areas. So I've learned in one area of my life to be content. I want that to be in every area of my life, because contentment is something that doesn't just happen. You ask my boys, when they get an opportunity, do you want to go drive in dad's car or mom's car? My gas tank has a small leak in it, and my car smells like gasoline. I will not park it in the garage, even if the garage is open to park it in, because I don't want my garage in my house smelling like gasoline. I park it outside on purpose. And my boys don't even want to ride in my car. They get to at times because dad gets to be the taxi on occasion, and it is what it is. But if I wanted higher blood pressure and more stress, I could drive a newer vehicle and pay monthly payments on it. I could pay more for insurance, which would also be higher. But contentment's a valuable lesson, isn't it? What do we read in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10? These are the words that we read. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with these. But those who want to be rich fall into temptation, a trap, and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and by craving it, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pains. Notice some key phrases in that text. Godliness with contentment are gain. When we do the right thing and when we learn contentment, if you want a definition for contentment, it's this: being okay with what we already have. If we can learn to be okay with what we already have, life gets fun. This mentality is opposed to desires. Didn't we see that come up? And these desires most often just result in pain, because it just increases hardship in our life. And notice, it does not say that money is the root of evil. It says that the love of money is the root of all evil. For some of us, it's not that we don't understand that we need it to survive. It's that we're living for this game that we play, because we've misunderstood even money altogether, so that debt's okay, and it's something that we just feel like, if we just keep this cycle, if I spend more, I can make more. And all the while, we're on the wrong side of interest, and our money talks aren't even interesting because we're ashamed because of our debt load. So we need to overcome debt and the bigger is better mentality with contentment. That is the simple way to overcome those deals. We need to look at what we have and say, are these okay? Are these sufficient? And at least until we've got a better plan on how to make our upgrades in the right time and in the right season, then our money gets more fun. Notice we can overcome entitlement. And we overcome entitlement with humility. There is a biblical idea for overcoming this. Matter of fact, it was funny. I was reading in Proverbs this morning just because I'd actually already read my Bible reading, and I was up early this morning, and so I started opening Proverbs, and I memorized one this morning. It just jumped out at me. Proverbs 22:4 says, I knew what I was preaching today. I'm going through the sermon in my head, and this one jumps out at me. Proverbs 22:4, the result of humility is the fear of God along with wealth. How? The result of humility gets wealth? How? This is how. Because when we're not entitled to things anymore, when we say, you know what, this isn't mine, why am I getting something that I could get, or that I have in this mindset that I should get it? That's going to result in wealth, because it's going to result in a different mindset about money. Humility is going to result in the fear of God along with wealth, honor, and life. I'll take those three. And what is it? Is money going to get those things for us? Is the love of money going to get those things? No. Humility is going to get us those things. And for some of us, we need to remember this entitlement that we have. Friends, I want to tell you, we did not have one iota of say on whether or not we would be born Americans. And we should probably humbly fall on our faces tonight, if we haven't done so already, and say, you know what, God? Man, my country of origin, why did you spoil me? I spent the summer of 2001 in Tanzania, East Africa, and I want to tell you, the reverse culture shock was more difficult, and it was more difficult because of entitlement. When I went to the market in Tanzania, I was glad if they had a roll of toilet paper. I didn't know that there was a difference between plush and how many plies and how many squares in a stinking roll. I just wanted the stuff because I didn't want it on my hand like the culture that I was in did. And so it was blown perspective. Humility happens pretty fast in a place like that. And when you come home to the land of entitlement, it gets different. And friends, we can overcome entitlement with humility. And what did we read in verse 7 of 1 Timothy chapter 6? What does verse 7 there say again? Just that great reminder, very similar to the words that Job spoke when everything was taken from him. For we brought nothing into the world and can take nothing out. Friends, we may think we're a big deal. But when we start putting eternity into perspective, we need more humility than we do need wealth or entitlement. And that's a promise. And the scriptures tell us that if we can have humility, we're even going to get wealth, honor, and life. I'm going to bank on that. I'm going to pray for that. The third way to overcome debt, we do it with contentment, we do it with humility, and we overcome debt and what we've been taught with discipline. We overcome what we've been taught with discipline. Look at verses 11 and 12 with me. In 1 Timothy 6, if you're still there, verses 11 and 12 read this way, "But you, man of God, run from these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. Fight the good fight for the faith. Take hold of eternal life that you were called to and have made a good confession about in the presence of many witnesses." I don't know if you catch that, but Paul's saying, look, this desire mentality, this entitlement mentality, this bigger is better, and what we've been taught, these are things that we can use as a crutch to get debt, but he's saying run from these things. There are better things. And that running from is a disciplined deal. I like to tell you a lot of what Satan's not going to tempt you to do, because I think we all know what Satan will tempt us to do. Satan is not going to tempt you to stop incurring debt. He likes you that way. He can control us better that way. But discipline includes running away from the temptation of getting caught up in this trap of having all of this world's toys that don't last. It also includes a discipline of staying focused on the eternal things that do last. And when we accompany this with humility and contentment, our future can be ever bright. It's quite possible that many of us came to church today with a great deal of debt, and even a mindset that debt is okay. And at the same time, we come with all kinds of stress and tension that are tied to that debt. And that makes talking about our money no fun at all. And if that's you today, that's where you are. That's okay. We're going to love you where you are. But we want money talks to be fun for you again and in your home. I want them to be fun between you and your spouse, between you and your children. Ever since Megan and I stopped spending every penny we made and made a concentrated effort to be content in areas, saying no to some desires until we had saved and paid cash for other things that we wanted, money talks are more fun every year in the Holcomb house. And the change wasn't my income. For the last several years, we lived on one income. Now it's even getting, our money talks just got real fun real fast because Megan's now making an income. And this is new. We're like, sweet, and we're going to still live on my income. And so we're going to make her income do some fun things for the kingdom and for us, and it's going to be awesome. Sweet. Money talks are getting really exciting in our home. We don't like the high blood pressure. We don't like the raised voices and elevated tension that's tied to money talks. I'm trying to see what I can take out of this. You don't want to hear all my story. Let me just say this. When Megan and I moved to Eudora, Kansas, we took a little bit of a pay cut, knowing that our son, youngest son, was going to go to school sometime. But because we were disciplined, we'd been living on envelopes and the envelope system for over 3 years to that point. And Megan's van, like the week we moved here, starts having some sounds to it. And we take it into the shop. And it's going to cost us several hundred dollars to fix the front end alignment of a car. You know how freeing it was to open up that envelope and pull out almost everything that was in it, and we actually had some left over, to walk in and pay cash for a car repair? If that happened 3 years earlier, we're probably asking what's on the credit card. See what this mindset can do? I want to tell you, my income didn't change in that three-year period. I worked for the same church, doing the same thing. Is all that changed was a mindset so that it would result in a different way of applying our life. And as I grow, as I mature in life, I realize these are biblical ideals. The world we live in is not a very biblical world, and we can have it all now, but we're going to also have the pain that is tied with it all now. And that's what I want to save you from. I want money talks to be more fun. Many families are crawling in debt. Maybe you're here and you're 18, or you've got an 18-year-old or some that's going to be there. Will you give them a $600,000 gift? You can afford to give them that gift. Talk to them about debt. Moms and dads, let's have these conversations with our kids. Conversations, let's be honest, we wish our parents had that conversation with us, don't we? But instead, we started behind. I just heard a commercial yesterday. I made the mistake of listening to the KU football game. Heartbreaking, devastating game to listen to. Capital Federal has a commercial that comes on. Freshman in college buys a student loan, or not a student loan, buys an auto loan and graduates and pays it off. And he gets married and gets a mortgage for the touchdown. Or, you know, it's like this whole deal where, and I'm sitting here thinking, people are buying into this. If you're a freshman in college, you're going to struggle to pay the auto loan payments, let alone, what auto loans do you have that are going to let you wait till you're out of college to pay it off? But this is the mentality that's being pushed down our throats, because debt is okay. And friends, it's not okay, especially if you want money talks to be fun. Next week, we're going to talk about a master plan. We're going to talk about how to make a budget, how to start having these conversations in your home. And I think this is a relevant topic. I think this is relevant. I think some of our homes need to have these conversations. For some of you, you've been having these conversations all along, and it is fun. And this is what you need to know. You can still be at these because you're going to be encouraging other people in their journey and in their life, and you want to be able to encourage them with these same tools. So bring your friends next week. It'll be a good lesson on how to plan and put this into action. But the bottom line today is simply this. Sorry. Understand debt and overcome it. Understand debt and overcome it. I think that when we get an understanding of what debt is, and when we overcome it with some better mentalities, when we learn the art of contentment, when we learn humility, and when we learn discipline, we can overcome our desires, we can overcome entitlement, we can overcome this bigger is better need, and through discipline we can overcome what we've been taught so that the generation behind us can be in a better place than we've been, simply because we learn to say no, and that we're not okay with just doing what we've always done, so that we can be better going forward. This is a mindset. And it's a mindset that our Savior really had when it came to our eternal debt. See, as much as we all walked into this room with some form of debt in our lives, the greatest debt that we walk into this room with is our debt of sin. And Jesus wasn't okay with that debt, was he? Matter of fact, the scriptures are clear. That is why he came to this earth. So he paid for our sins so that we wouldn't have to go through life wallowing in them. And that we might enjoy life with him because he wants us to be in a right relationship with him. We celebrate that truth every week at the Refuge Christian Church as we offer a time of communion with the Lord, and today will be no different. And as we do, make sure you spend a little bit of time there as you pray and say thank you. Thank you, God, that debt wasn't something you were okay with, even our debt, as you made a payment on our behalf so that we can be with you. I'll be down here in the front if you want to pray with me or pray for me, or if there's an opportunity for me to pray for you, I want to do that today as well. God in heaven, we come today recognizing that you are good. And that although we live in a land that says some things are okay, I pray that we would live different and that we'd look different. And some of that different would even result in joy. God, we live in a land that talks all the time about money, but we tend not to like to talk about it to others. We only like to talk about it on TV, mostly because we've bought into their schemes, into their marketing plans, into the care that they have for their own pocketbooks and not their care that they have for us. And so I pray that, God, we would be different, that we would spend some time thinking about debt and how we got into it, and that we would own all of the unhealthy desires that led to it, all of the entitlement, all of the bigger is better, and what we've been taught. And God, give us the strength to overcome it, even from a mental perspective, so that we can recognize that, you know what? Some of these things that are on our want list, we really don't need. And for the sake of our future, we can hold off on because of contentment. And God, some of these things that we think that we deserve and that this world owes us, in humility, might we look at you and your perspective and remember that we're not going to be able to take anything with us when we go. And might we with humility consider others even over our own needs. And God, give us discipline to overcome even what we've been taught, even how we've been nurtured. And I pray that God, as we do so, that you would get glory in our lives, because even this thing that is crippling for so many can become fun for us again. Not because we're rich, but because we're not consumed by the dollars. We're not consumed by the things of this world that result in pain. And God, we recognize that even in what you did in coming to this earth, you had a same desire to see that debt was overcome. So thank you for the price that you paid. And as we take this bread and this cup, might we remember that sacrifice so that we can live debt-free eternally from our sins when we stand before our accuser and you say their debt has been paid in full. In Jesus' name.